Shalom, and welcome to the Marshall Portnoy Show. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Marshall Portnoy Show. This is Marshall Portnoy, and I will be your host the next hour or so, and a memorable hour it will be, as we observe what would have been the 89th birthday of Anne Frank. Anne's story is well known to the world. Born June 12, 1929, she had a happy childhood in her native Frankfurt, Germany. But as the Nazis overran Europe, it became clear to Otto, her father, that they must leave. The trouble was they went only as far as Amsterdam, and that proved to be not nearly far enough. The Nazis conquered Holland, and the predictable roundup of Jews began. The Franks were effectively trapped there. And when Anne's older sister, Margot, was told to report to Nazi headquarters, the family went into hiding on July 6, 1942. They were hidden by sympathetic non-Jews for more than 2 years. But early in August of 1944, the sun rose on the day, the specter of which had terrified them for 25 months. August 4th, 1944, a Friday. Amsterdam, Holland. 5 soldiers break down the door of a warehouse attic that has hidden 8 tired souls for over 2 years. The 8, a middle-aged couple with 2 adolescent daughters, another couple and their 17-year-old son, and a dentist, are immediately arrested. Silverbauer of the Green Police picks up the girl's father's briefcase. Hey, any jewels? No, no jewels, replies the trembling 55-year-old. Just some papers. The impatient Gestapo thug pours a shower of handwritten pages on the filthy garret floor, loots the room of a religious candelabrum and some silverware, and shoves the sobbing man through the door. Those papers, later recovered by the father, were a diary written by his younger daughter. Her name was Anne Frank, and today, June 12th, she would have celebrated her 89th birthday. Not observed or had or marked the day, but celebrated it. Because under the most difficult and depressing conditions, Anne Frank celebrated almost every day as a gift, an opportunity, an occasion for hope. Discouraged, she believed. Yearning for cycling, dancing, whistling, looking out into the world, she reflected that she had all I could wish for. Frightened beyond imagination, she wrote ingenious poems, fashioned charming gifts, delighted in a brooch, a piece of cake, a pair of shoes. Her life was a poem, her smile a gift. Her dark, unforgettable eyes saw everything with Chaucerian insight, incredible humor, incomparable irony, and a warm, abiding love. Would she indeed have become the author she wished to be? She certainly had a remarkable talent, a style that is marvelously analytical, yet wholly accessible. She could have been as well, it seems, a psychologist, therapist, teacher, or theologian, or perhaps a grandmother, great-grandmother by now, telling stories to another little girl with dark, unforgettable eyes about a secret annex, a frightening arrest, a miraculous deliverance. Alas, there was no deliverance. In March 1945, 7 months after her arrest, and 3 months before her 16th birthday, Anne died of typhus in a Nazi hellhole called Belsen. Her sister Margaret had already met the same fate. They were separated from their mother, who had died in Auschwitz on January 6th, 1945. Anne was among the last to be deported from Holland. Had she survived just another month, she might well be alive today. But in a larger sense, Anne is alive. Those eyes still search the world through a crack in the window, just as they did then, and they penetrate the slit in our tired souls that still, in spite of everything, lets in the light of empathy, caring, and compassion. She peers through dirty net curtains hanging before very dusty windows, and still glimpses heaven. She had the impulse to do what she thought a good person would do, and to believe what a good person would believe. She is, therefore, the child that is the best within each of us.
Shining stars and cloudless skies of blue, through the window crack I see you, and I long to run and touch the sun. Dear diary, what else can I do? Growing up and longing for a friend, hoping that our secret life will end in words of light written in the night. My thoughts and hopes and dreams to you I send. I still believe, in spite of everything, that people really are good at heart. And the skies will be bright, and it will all come right, and a springtime of peace will start. Dreaming of the precious air of freedom, waking and I feel like crying. There's no place to go, but still I know. Skies are clearing, birds are flying. Happiness and love that I can share in a world of truth and beauty. When the thunder's near and when I fear, the light of morning dawn will come to me. I still believe, in spite of everything, that people really are good at heart, and the skies will be live right, and it will all come right, and a springtime of peace will start, and the skies will be bright, and it will all come right, and a springtime of peace will.
Anne Frank's diary has doubtless become the most famous one ever written. By 2015, it was estimated to have sold 30 million copies and been translated into 67 languages. But it had a modest beginning. Many publishers rejected the diary, doubting that the story of a Jewish adolescent in hiding during the war would have much appeal. The American Jewish author Meyer Levin, born in 1905, did much to bring the world's attention to the diary after it was finally published in the States in the early 50s. Not only did the diary transform the world of publishing, playwrights and screenwriters began to wonder whether such a story could have possibilities on the stage and screen. And thus begins one of the longest and saddest stories in the history of the theater. Levin had befriended Otto Frank, but what began as a friendship ended as bitter enmity. Levin had written a stage treatment of the diary and dreamed of a Broadway production. Publishers, producers, other writers got in the mix. What resulted was Levin's scripts being rejected in favor of the work of Francis Goodrich and Albert Hackett, a husband and wife writing team who had written a host of huge successes, including The Thin Man, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, and It's a Wonderful Life. It would be well beyond the scope of this radio show, indeed of a half dozen radio shows, to examine in detail the history of this dispute, which resulted in Meyer Levin suing Otto Frank, the father of Anne Frank, which is sort of like suing Mother Teresa. So without getting too much into the details, suffice it to say that the argument was centered in three areas. One, Meyer Levin's competence as a playwright. Two, the particularization of Anne Frank as a Jew in a story about a Jewish experience, versus the generalization of Anne Frank as a symbol of goodness, humanity, and the idealization of the young, a focus which certainly does not deny her Jewishness, but which casts her as a brave and articulate young woman who happened also to be Jewish. And three, staying faithful to all aspects of the content of Anne's diary, including those in which she bitterly criticizes her family members or others in the annex, and those of a sexual nature, as might be expected in the diary of a young girl growing into maturity, to boot in the presence of a young man just a few years older. In a few minutes, you'll have a chance to compare these two approaches as we listen first to a scene from the movie directed by George Stevens and based on the script by Goodrich and Hackett, and then a similar scene, as written by Meyer Levin and acted by faculty and staff of Philadelphia's Distinguished University of the Arts Theater Department. But first, this word. This is Marshall Portnoy at WWDBAM 860. I want to talk to you about the year 1885 for reasons that will become clear in just a moment. 1885, Charles Dow published the first edition of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. It was at $63, and it represented 14 companies, 12 of which were railroads, if you can believe it. The Statue of Liberty arrived in New York Harbor. President Chester A. Arthur dedicated the Washington Monument in February, and the following month, Grover Cleveland was inaugurated President of the United States, which is the month that they did it back then. But another thing happened in 1885 And that was the founding of S. Berkowitz and Son Women's Clothing. And do you believe it? It's still going on today. How many stores or businesses can you name that are still thriving 133 years later? But it is in its fifth generation, still serving smart women who want to be smart and look smart. You're smart to go to S. Berkowitz because you know that you're going to get the finest designer quality for the best value. Their secret is personal service. When you go into S. Berkowitz or even just call them on the telephone, they'll instinctively know what it is you need, what you have in mind, in terms of the look that you want. They're located at 362 Montgomery Avenue in Marion, just a few minutes from City Avenue. And their phone number is 610-664-6645. Well, their address may have changed. They're no longer at South and 6th as they were 100 years ago. But their commitment to quality and fashion has not altered one jot. The number again, 610-664-6645. S. Berkowitz and Sons and Grandsons and Great-Grandsons. S. Berkowitz, the Mecca for the modern woman. So that lush music, which is sort of the signature style of the great Hollywood composer Alfred Newman, is the background music describing the blossoming relationship of Anne and Peter in the secret annex. Alfred Newman, born in my hometown, New Haven, Connecticut, in 1900, died in Hollywood in 1970, and winner of 9 Oscars, which is to say that 10% of the years he lived, he won an Academy Award. He was the grandson of a cantor, but his family in New Haven was so poor that they once had to sell their dog to make monthly expenses. And to save money, Alfred walked 10 miles to music lessons. He not only wrote the music for such movies as All About Eve and The Robe, he arranged unforgettably the music of other composers, and he championed other composers, some controversial, whom he brought to the attention of Hollywood and the world. In 1999, the United States issued a postage stamp in his honor. Anyway, the music you just heard was his interpretation of the friendship between Anne and Peter, so let's listen to a scene from the movie with Millie Perkins and Richard Beimer. You may remember Richard Beimer as the actor who played opposite Natalie Wood in West Side Story, produced just a few years before this clip from The Diary of Anne Frank.
Already I know what I want to do, don't you? I want to be a journalist or something. I love to write. What do you want to do?
I know what I'd like right now. I'd like to make it to England and get with the Free Dutch forces over there.
Pater, you wouldn't try a thing like that. You'd never make it.
I'd make it.
Only a few of the hundreds that try do.
I know, but I'd like to get in it and hit back. Just sit here. It's not for me.
You like Margaret, don't you? Right from the start, you liked her. Liked her better than me.
I don't know.
It's all right. Everyone feels that way. Margaret's so good. She's sweet and bright and beautiful. And I'm not.
I wouldn't say that.
Oh, no, I'm not. I know that. I know quite well that I'm not a beauty. I never have been and never shall be.
I don't agree at all. I think you're pretty.
That's not true.
And another thing. You've changed. From the first, I mean.
I have.
I used to think that you were awful noisy.
And what do you think now, Pater? How have I changed?
Well, you're quieter.
I'm glad you don't just hate me.
I never said that.
I bet when you get out of here, you'll never think of me again.
That's crazy.
When you get back with all your friends, you're going to say, "Now what did I ever see in that Miss Quack Quack?"
I haven't got any friends.
Pater, of course you have. Everyone has friends.
Not me. I don't want any. I get along fine without them.
Does that mean you get along without me too? I think of myself as your friend.
No. If they were all like you, it'd be different.
This is Marshall Portnoy at WWDBAM 860. I'm so privileged to have the professor and students of the University of the Arts here today to bring a short scene from Meyer Levin's version of The Diary of Anne Frank. And it's my pleasure, first of all, to introduce David Howie, the professor at the University of the Arts. David, how are you?
I'm good this morning. Thank you, Marshall.
And David, what is your title or what are your responsibilities?
I'm the director of the School of Theater, the Brin School of Theater at the University of the Arts.
And we have just the right person.
I hope so.
Okay. And playing Anne today will be?
Zoe Feldman.
Hi, Zoe. Where are you from?
I'm from Baltimore, Maryland.
How do you like studying at the University of the Arts?
I love it. I enjoy it immensely.
What are your plans, Zoe? When do you graduate, and when are we going to see you on Broadway?
Oh, goodness. Well, I will be graduating next year in the spring of 2019, along with William. Besides that, I don't really have any solidified plans. Maybe stay in Philadelphia, audition and work, maybe apply to grad schools. We were just discussing this earlier, but it's all kind of up in the air. Very exciting, though.
Sounds like the theater to me. And playing Peter will be William.
William Shipley.
Hi, William. Where are you from?
Well, I'm from all over, but right now my family lives in D.C.
Nice to have you here, William. What about your plans in the theater and so forth?
Well, I'll be getting out a little earlier than Zoe. I graduate in December.
Ooh.
And then I'll be out auditioning and out in the real world.
All right. Zoe will be playing Anne Frank. William will be playing Peter. And Professor Howie will be playing Mr. Dussel. For those of you that don't remember, Mr. Dussel, or Dr. Dussel, I guess we'd say here, because he is a dentist, is a sort of an interloper. He comes to the garret a little bit later than the two families that are already there. That is Anne's family, the Franks, Peter's family, the Van Dons, and Mr. Dussel. So it's very, very limited and challenging in terms of how much room there is for everybody, expending water and making noise, because During the day, nobody could know that they were there, or they could be reported. Of course, we know that they eventually were. But at night, that was the time that that they could talk and so forth. And you're going to hear those challenges and those arguments come out as we listen to this excerpt from Meyer Levin's version of The Diary of Anne Frank.
Well, young lady?
Oh, just a few more minutes. I would like to finish my work.
You have ample time every day and during my nap.
When you first came here, it was arranged that this room should be for the two of us. And if it were divided fairly, you would have it all morning and I all afternoon. But all I ask is 2 afternoons each week until 5:30.
No.
But why?
I have important work to do.
But can't you at least discuss my needs?
Your needs? You don't work seriously at anything.
I don't. Well, Mr. Dussel...
Your scribbling is not work.
My work is serious to me just as yours is to you.
I am at the table and shall stay here.
It's unfair. There is nowhere else for me...
Serious work. Let me see what's... Sometimes my heart is full of love. What do you
Give
know...
Give me that.
...about love?
Did you ever think, Dr. Dussel, our generation is so pressed to find out everything because our time may never come?
Please stop shouting.
I ask only for my rights, Mr. Dussel.
Your rights? You can't talk to me about your rights at all. I've never seen such a child.
I am not a child. I am a person, and I ask for my share of this table. I'll go see Peter.
Oh, you.
You might get up when a lady enters. Give me some room.
This is my bed.
I've got nowhere to go in this house.
Well, you don't have to come and push me off my bed.
I'm just a horrible child who pushes everyone around, didn't you know? I'm a monster.
I don't really think you're that bad.
Somebody has to be nice to me. I gave you an apple yesterday.
It had worms. You didn't want it.
You still have my movie stars pasted up. I'll give you more if you like.
These are enough. They've become like old friends, and I like to see them every day.
I thought you didn't need friends.
I don't care to push myself on people.
Thanks for the compliment. I'm going.
No, I didn't mean that. I mean, I'm not clever at saying things like you and Margot.
Peter... You're shy. That cat looks like she's gonna have kittens.
That cat is a he.
But it's so fat.
Well, from the rats in the warehouse, he's lucky. He's allowed to eat rats.
Oh, stop. Are you sure it's a he?
Of course. You can look for yourself.
Oh. Well, exactly how can you tell?
These are the male organs.
Oh.
Didn't you really know?
Don't laugh.
Who's laughing?
It's just that grown-ups are very tiresome about the subject of sex.
Oh, they like to make a great mystery out of nothing.
You know, Peter, Mother even told me never to discuss this subject with boys. Parents are really silly.
Well, mothers are afraid of all sorts of things.
They don't realize how much we know these days. I think a girl and a boy can talk to each other like this about anything, don't you?
It's just nature. It's terrible for the male when they have to stay shut in. The sex urge in the male is stronger than in the female.
Oh, the female sex urge is just as strong as in the male.
It's like a magnet and an object. One stays still and the other has to go to it.
Love.
What?
Love is like... A man and a woman were once one person that was split apart, and the halves try to come together again. That's an ancient Greek legend. I read it in Plato.
Yes, but in all the stories, the woman stays still and the man goes to the ends of the earth to find her. It's the man who has the urge.
Oh. Perhaps that's why Dr. Dussel is so restless. He's been away from his wife for so long, and he can't go to her. It's because of his urge.
Anne, Will you help me with my French? I don't know a thing.
You know lots of things. Just call me when you need me. Dr. Doozle?
Now what?
Oh, nothing. This is a really beautiful picture of your wife.
Mm.
I'm glad she's safe in Switzerland.
Very well. Here's the chair. Otherwise, I suppose I shall be told later that Anne Frank failed her exam because Doozle wouldn't give up his table for her. But don't consider this a precedent.
Nice. You guys are fantastic. Thank you so much, University of the Arts faculty and students. You know, going back to Millie Perkins, I never realized until today how much she sounds like Eva Marie Saint, so much that wonderful, wonderful voice. And both of them had beautiful hair, which takes me to the fact that you know what they say about first impressions. You have only one chance to make one, and your hair defines so much about your appearance. And that's the thing about Raya Coiffure on Haverford Station Road in Haverford. The minute you walk in, your first impression is that you're in a special place, everything just beautiful. That's the same care they take with your appearance. One customer, I think, said it best. Raya, she said, is not a stylist. She is an artist. And there are a wide variety of artisans there who can give you exactly the look you like. Dignified and stately, wild child, a little bit alternative, dainty during the day, a tad daring at dusk. Just right for that first meeting with a client or a date. You'll find your stylist at Raya Haig, Raya Coiffure, and you'll find yourself as well. Call them for an appointment at 610-645-0707, because you'll find your best self at Raya Coiffure. To find yourself and the hairstyle in which you shine, again the number 645-0707. Raya Coiffure, not hair today and gone tomorrow. Hair today, hair for always. This is Marshall Portnoy on WWDB AM 860. So glad, listeners, that you are with us, and you'll be glad that I am sitting next to Rita Ratzen, because she always brings us such delight and such a wonderful amount of learning about Yiddish. And there couldn't be anything more wonderful to learn about, right?
Right, and it's always such a delight for me to be here.
Last week we learned about your granddaughter's dance recital. And what kind of dance does she do, by the way?
She dances ballet.
All right. And how old is she?
She is 11 years old.
And that's just what I want to ask you about. How do you say she is 11 years old?
Sie ist 11 Jahre alt. So let me also interject.
Go ahead.
I said that in my Galicianer dialect, the one that I'm most comfortable in, 11 Jahre alt. So if you're...
No, do that again. 11 what? 11?
11 is the Galicianer way of saying 11.
Oh.
And the Litvish dialect...
Oh, 11 Jahre alt, 11 years old.
Old. Alt means old. And the Litvish way of saying that sounds like this. Sie ist 11 Jahre alt.
She is 11 years old. In Litvish is...
Sie ist 11 Jahre alt.
In Galiciana, she is 11 years old.
Sie ist 11 Jahre alt.
Okay. And how would you say... He is 11 years old.
Okay. He is 11 years old in the Galiciano dialect. Is 11 Jahre alt. And in the Litvish, is 11 Jahre alt.
So let's count from 1 to 11.
That's great.
Go.
Eins, zwei, drei, vier, fünf, sechs, sieben, acht, neun, zehn, elf.
The nine I got. The nine.
So all that was in Litvish.
Okay, well, let's stay with Litvish again. And again, one.
Eins.
Two.
Zwei.
Three.
Drei.
Four.
Vier.
Five.
Fünf.
Six.
Sechs.
Seven.
Sieben.
Eight.
Acht.
Nine is nine.
Nine is nine.
Okay. Ten.
Ten.
11.
Elf.
Okay. And now we're going to go to Galiciana.
Okay.
All right. One.
Eins.
Two.
Zwei.
Three.
Drei.
Four.
Vier.
Five.
Fünf.
Six.
Sechs.
Seven.
Sieben.
Eight.
Acht.
Nine.
Nine.
Ten.
Zehn.
11.
Elf.
All right. Now, the final exam would be, if you were taking your final exam in Yiddish, let's go 1 to 11, Litvish, and then Galiciana.
Okay. All right. Let me keep this straight.
Yeah. All right. Now, for the final exam, we're going to go 1 through 11, first in Litvish, and then Galiciana. 1.
In Litvish, it's eins. In Galiciana, it's eins.
Eins, eins. All right. 2.
Zwei in Litvish, zwei in Galiciana.
Zwei, zwei. 3.
Drei is the same in both dialects.
Easy. Okay, thank you for that. 4.
Vier is the same.
5.
Fünf in Litvish and finif in Galiciana.
6.
Sechs is the same in both.
7.
Sieben is the same in both.
8.
Acht is the same in both.
So we're getting a pass with 6, 7, and 8. That's very good. 9.
9 is the same. Well, I can't say it's the same. 9 is in Litvish, and non is in Galiciano.
10.
10 is the same in both.
11.
Elf is Litvish, and elef is Galiciano.
All right.
And I'm amazed I can keep them so straight.
You are unbelievable. But you told me that when you were growing up, you had this facility able to do that.
Yes.
That's great. All right. And this week, I'm going to think of 11 reasons why it's so great to have Rita Ratzen on the show. And you can reach her at rjratzen@yahoo.com. Thanks so much.
It's a pleasure.
Anne Frank's was doubtless the most famous to emerge from World War II, that is her diary, probably the most famous of all time. But it was not the only such diary, and it was not the only diary written by a young person. Prior to her death in 1943 in Auschwitz, a beautiful young woman named Rutke Laskier, Laskier, wrote a heart-wrenching diary that spanned 3 months' time, shortly before her death. Rutke parallels Anne in many ways. They were both born in 1929. They died within a year of one another. One said, "In spite of everything, I still believe that people are really good at heart." Rutke wrote, "Despite everything, I want to live." But Anne's diary was written in the relative safety of a hiding place, as degrading as that was. Rutke wrote directly from the ghetto in Bytczyn, Poland. Eventually, tragically, Anne would come to know the unspeakable horrors which Rutke chronicled. Listen to her words. August 11th, 1943. Big flakes of snow are falling and covering the mud on the street with a white layer. Winter. Nevertheless, the usual children's cries of joy are not heard on the streets. The winter is a nightmare of terrible poverty and hunger. Everywhere people are standing in line, lines for potatoes, coal, bread. Children stretch out their hands to those passing by. They are the most predominant symbol of the gray ghetto. Their parents have been deported, and the children are left abandoned to their destiny, to go astray in the streets. To make sense of all this, we turn to historian, scholar, and filmmaker Emanuel Rund, best known as the originator of the idea of International Holocaust Day, observed each year on January 27th, the anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz-Birkenau. Remarkably, Emanuel is distantly related both to the families of Anne Frank and Ruth Kalaskier. He speaks to us by telephone from his home in New York City.
Well, our listeners have heard all about your very, very distinguished career. And it's a real pleasure for us to have Emanuel Rund on the air today to talk about Anne Frank, but also about Ruta Laskier, whom I dare say most of our listeners do not know about. A Jewish diarist from Poland, born 1929, 1943, murdered at Auschwitz in 1943 at the age of 14, and a three-month diary written in 1943. And Emanuel, you shared with me that you are actually somehow related to both of these young women.
Yeah, I'm related through my grandmother. She, Ida Dannenberg from Kassel, Germany, and the Dannenberg family were related to Sophie Frank, the grandmother of Anne Frank, the daughter of Zachariah Frank.
And to Ruta, and to Rutka Laskier as well.
To Ruta Laskier, my family came from that area where she came from, the town of Benzin, and the town, next town of Sosnowitz, and the town of Oświęcim, which became later on Auschwitz. And so my relatives lived there for many, many years in the same area, and some of them also went through what Rutka and her family went through, and through the Holocaust altogether. Some survived and told me about it, some wrote about it, and so that's the connection to both.
Emanuel, as you study these two very important pieces of work, these two diaries by these young women, what are your feelings? How do you describe them? How do you compare them?
Well, I would say that already as a young man, I read already Anne Frank's diary, as many other people did. Later on, Rutka's diary that I received from Adam, who published the book, as he received it over 60 years after the diary was written. Teenagers who want to live like everybody else, mm-hmm. but they cannot do it because they're, so to say, incarcerated.
So difficult to imagine, so difficult even for you and me to talk about today.
By the way, Otto Frank gave the diary to my other relative, second cousin of mine, mother-in-law, Annette Blitz-König, who was a friend of Anne in Amsterdam, and all through the way to the concentration camp Bergen-Belsen, where both got the typhus, and were bedridden. My relative survived and Anne Frank didn't survive. And so I spoke with her about it. Now, with the issue of Otto, her father, what we know is that when Anne Frank wrote about the relationships in the family, she wrote sometimes, being depressed, and in her situation, she wrote some things about the family that later on, Otto, when he got the diary in 1945, after he was the only survivor of the family, There were some things in there that he decided, so to say, to censor. Now, there's also something that was discovered actually only lately, a few weeks ago, that Anne, of course, being a teenager and would like to be loved and love and had a boyfriend, although it was not the perfect for her, but he was the only one in that annex. And she was kind of frustrated and wrote also about things about human sexuality, what she knew, her own experience that she wished for, and whatever she read about. And she wrote it in two pages that were at some point two brown pages on the back. They were glued to each other, and it took Dutch scientists months and months to try to open it, and they did open it just lately. So it was published, and it was something else that Otto, of course, was not approved of, because he wanted to keep the soul of Anne the way he wanted to, and not with a girl who is entertaining herself or experiencing herself with topics that could or should have been her topics years later, and that was part of the problem. Now, in compare with Rutka, Rutka wrote her diary without the knowledge of her family. The only one who knew about it was her Polish Catholic friend, Stanisława Sapinska, who helped her also hide it, the diary, between the floors. She got it later on, it got to be published. And, of course, both of them wished that their diaries will be read in case something bad happens to them, which it did. And, thank God these two diaries, among a few other diaries of teenagers or elderly people who wrote their diaries about the Holocaust, including my father, Aaron, who published a novel based on his diary from Germany, and about him losing his first wife, Ellie, and his son, which could have been my half-brother. But I hope that maybe in the future, here and there, some diaries will be found. And, because the stories have to be told.
What are your emotions now as we speak, talking about Anne Frank, talking about Rutka Laskier, talking about your own family?
When my father took me to the first Holocaust museum on Mount Zion in Jerusalem, called Martef HaShoah, the Holocaust basement, where I saw the soap made of human beings, that famous bar of soap, and also the lampshades made by Ilse Koch in concentration camp Buchenwald, where her husband was the Nazi commander of the camp. Yeah, the emotions are split between, one hand, thinking about all those terrible years that our people and other people suffered, and I lost most of my parents' family members. And I helped hundreds of survivors in New York and heard their stories and had to deal with their emotions. And when I made 30 films about the Holocaust, and again, I met so many survivors, the emotions were the terrible agony of thinking about them. So I was in the both emotions of the memory and of the Holocaust, and so to say, the enemies who continue to be and to threaten us Jews all over the world.
Our listeners will want to know that Emmanuel will be returning to us this summer to spend some time in advance of Tisha B'Av, Which was a date that was considered for Yom HaShoah or a Holocaust Day or a Holocaust commemoration, but to discuss his role in the selection of January 27th as International Holocaust Day. And at that time, I want Emmanuel to talk a little bit more about his movies and where they might be available. But today's conversation has been so interesting and so provocative, and you have been so generous in the time that you've given the radio show. Emmanuel, if people should want to write to you just about your views or to find out how they can view the movies and other materials that you have made available to us, how can they reach you?
Thank you. They can reach me writing to my email address, which is filmmy, one word, F like in Fred, I like in Israel, L like in Larry, M like in Mary, additional M, double M, like in Mary, Y, filmmy, in one word, of at AOL.com. I don't mind if they call me at 347-820-5228. I repeat, 347-820-5228. And I thank you, Marshall Portnoy, for doing this show, because every bit of information that comes out to Jews and to non-Jews about the great topics that you talk about is very helpful to have a better world. Tikkun Olam.
Emmanuel Run, thank you so much for being on the show today, and we look forward to talking with you again mid-summer. Have a good summer, and thanks again for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
Shalom uvracha. Bye-bye.
Shalom, shalom. Litraot.
Litraot.
Anne Frank and Rutka Leskier, two extraordinary young women who teach us so much in spite of everything. So let's take some further instruction from them regarding this current concern with abuse of women and the Me Too movement and so forth. God forbid that any human being should ever again be made to endure the absolute degradation that happened to Anne Frank and Rutka Leskier and 6 million others. But current events show us very well that women do not have to be put in concentration camps to be abused. So I want to address specifically those reporters who question former President Clinton by asking him whether, in light of the Me Too movement, he feels that what he did should now require a different response to Monica Lewinsky or to the public. Such a question by intelligent, indeed brilliant, men and women of the press was neither intelligent nor brilliant. The seriousness of what Clinton did does not change because there is a new attitude in vogue as a result of the multiple instances of abuse that have lately emerged in the news. It should have been thought disgusting and dangerous then. It should be thought exactly the same way now. It required a personal, profound apology to Lewinsky then. In the absence of such an apology then, it requires a personal, profound apology to her now. This show is not political in nature. We look at the world through the permanent telephoto lens of Judaism, not through the variable zoom lens of politics and popular opinion. Because recent news has emboldened women to assert, as well they should, their right to freedom from predatory behavior, does not create a timeline in which everything BMT, that is before Me Too, is to an extent excused because it was done in a less enlightened time. And everything AMT, after Me Too, should suddenly be regarded more seriously. Politics changes. But Judaism is at heart immutable. Some things to catch up on. I have a sponsor. Actually, we're not starting with them until next week, but I am just so excited about House of Kosher that I just need to tell you about it. It's at 9806 Busselton Avenue, just a few minutes from the Boulevard. Go there, and I'm going to talk a lot more about them next week. I'm just so excited about what they have done there. It's big, it's bright, it's a supermarket, it's kosher, and you will love being in that atmosphere. Also, for the kinder, tomorrow, Pajamarama at Adith Israel, the main line on Old Lancaster Road at 6 o'clock. Kids come in your pajamas, there's stories, there's food, it goes from 6 to 7. You're going to have a wonderful, wonderful time. Thanks so much for joining us today. Thanks so much to Emmanuel Rund, to our wonderful cast who performed a scene from Meyer Levin's version of The Diary of Anne Frank. Professor David Howie is Dr. Dussel. Zoe Feldman is Anne. William Shipley as Peter. We have a wonderful show next week. Do you know what Juneteenth is? Well, tune in next week to find out and examine as well the origins of this important observance and its potential relationship to the Black Jewish experience. Juneteenth, Freedom Day, next Tuesday. But wait, there's so much more. Lori, Modern Matchmaker, will be with us to take your telephone questions about life, love, dating, marriage, and relationships. You don't have to wait until next Tuesday. Send in your questions now to MarshallPortnoyShow@gmail.com or P.O. Box 2786, Balakinwood, PA 19004. We got great music next week, too. I want you to hear a new song by Lori Akers. Thanks to Yiddishist Rita Ratzen, to engineer extraordinaire Jason Duffy. If you want a complete list of the music we played on this show or any show, just write to P.O. Box 2786, email MarshallPortnoyShow@gmail.com. Remember, the show is rebroadcast on Friday at 10, right after Barry. If you're not fortunate enough to be in Philadelphia, this great town, you can hear it live streamed from anywhere in the world at www.dbam.com. You can also use that website to listen to any of our previous shows 24 hours. Please join us next Tuesday at 10. Till then, this has been Marshall Portnoy. Shalom uvracha. Shabbat.